it's really a matter of what can I do? What do I get to do? How much better am I today than I was yesterday? And so it's incremental. And almost always I awaken with a smile. I mean, it's like you start there, happiness is there. You know, it's created. You've created it. So the genie show, oh, our lonely days are gone. It's magic, I know. I think it will be fun. Come on, hello. Like we knew all along. It's time to party. The genie show, oh, oh.
Are you the kind of person who feels like you don't have enough time in the day to attend to what you really want to do? It's kind of like you're going along with everything just to get along. You know, you're someone who's constantly giving and putting other people's needs and agendas before yours. And when we do this consistently, this becomes a subconscious behavior and it forms into a habit. On this episode of The Genie Show, I talk with clinical psychologist and breakthrough leadership coach, Dr. Wayne Pennell. He likes to be called Dr. P. And he's a super awesome guy. He actually gives me some on-the-spot laser coaching tips about how the words I use to talk to and about myself can really impact my growth and how I want to achieve certain outcomes. Now, this particular thing may seem trivial, but it's super important when it comes to how kind we are to ourselves and how we inspire growth within ourselves. Because after all, the conversation we have with ourselves is a conversation we're having with the universe. So here's the episode with Dr. Wayne Pennell. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Genie Show, where we unpack the human condition and its path to happiness. Today I'm joined by speaker, author, and breakthrough coach, Dr. Wayne Pennell. Wayne, thank you for joining me on The Genie Show.
What a pleasure. What a great day to be breaking through and feeling alive.
Absolutely. Wayne, there's so many things I want to talk to you about. Obviously, in the introduction, I mentioned you were a speaker, author, and breakthrough coach. We're going to touch base on exactly what that is. But I kind of want to start with some questions about you and where you got to where you are. So you're a doctor. So what sort of doctor are you?
People ask me that all the time. What sort of doctor are you? So I got my doctorate in clinical psychology years and years and years ago, 3.5 decades ago.
Wow.
Almost immediately, I blended that with business. So I've been doing coaching and executive coaching really for about 35 years. It's been great. It's been pretty amazing.
So a clinical psychologist, I feel like I should roll out my couch and just tell you all my problems. Do you want to hear them or cool, we're just doing this interview?
I have time.
Maybe we'll save that for another show. But obviously having that background of clinical psychology and obviously studying the human mind and human behaviors, you obviously were privy to, due to your studies and your profession, some knowledge about the human condition. Now, I don't mean to talk about the human condition like it's a disease, but I'm just fascinated by how unique humans are and how like two different people can react or behave in a separate way in a similar circumstance. So before we get into that, I kind of want to talk to you about, so you were a clinical psychologist. You said you did a lot of coaching and leadership coaching around that. What was a bridge from clinical psychology to the breakthrough coaching type things that you do now?
So that started years ago. And as I said, it was almost immediate and actually accidental. I was doing regular couples work, regular, whatever that is, right? And a gentleman called me after one of the sessions and he said, hey, I wanted to thank you for working with me and my wife. And I'm like, well, you're welcome. You know, he goes, but that's not why I'm calling. I'm like, what? He goes, look, that thing you did with me and my wife. I'm like, the communication work, the getting you to talk better, see eye to eye on things, you know, that thing I did with you and your wife. He goes, yeah. That thing you did with me and my wife, can you do that with me and my vice president?
Oh.
And that, your reaction, that was my reaction. It was like, what? Like,
wow.
He goes, look, that thing you did, can you do it with me and my vice president? And I said, sure. I said, come on in. He goes, no, you come to me. And I was being all, you know, Dr. Pernell like, you must come to me. And he's like, no, come to me. We went back and forth a few times. And finally, I caved. I went to his office and we did couples work, quote unquote, in his office with him and his vice president. I hadn't realized during the time that I was doing the couples therapy with him and his wife that he was the president of a major company in South San Francisco.
Wow. So
I went to visit him in his executive offices. About the fourth time I showed up, and this was really the turning point for me, where I realized this was something. About the fourth time I showed up, the line staff was outside. There were like four or five line workers outside going, "We're so glad you're here." I'm like, "That's interesting. What do you mean?" And they point to the top floor. They are talking better together. They understand each other and they're on the same page with their strategy. It makes our job easier. Thank you for being here. And it was at that point that I began doing focus groups with line staff, middle management, and senior management. And I began doing organization development before it was even a thing. When I was doing this work, there was industrial organizational, but there was IO, but there wasn't OD. Right? So organization development wasn't even a thing. And so I was sort of stumbling my way through doing focus groups and strategy and communication work and building culture from the inside out. And that really changed my course of direction, realizing that everything I'd learned about family dynamics, everything I'd learned about couples interactions, and everything I'd learned about the development of the human, as you say, the human condition,
yeah,
it all plays out in the workplace. We don't change as humans when we go to work. And so whether you're in a cubicle or a factory or an executive suite, your quirky self shows up. Even if you don't want it to, it does. And so that really allowed me to step in and do the work where I basically took the idea that we're an expanded family. You know, in the workplace, we're an expanded family. All your stuff shows up. How are you going to communicate? How are you going to get your needs met? How do you know that we're all working for the same thing or working toward the same thing? And so really doing communication work became a huge focus of mine.
I love how you look at that, because I've worked at different corporations before and they always say to me, you bring your personality to work with you. And I know that it's true. And I know that, you know, I automatically don't switch off my personality when I go to work. I'm kind of the same person. But
how could you really?
Thank you, Dr. P. But you were saying that, you know, in the workplace, your personality or your authentic traits play out exactly as they would at home, because, you know, we are, again, a part of the human condition is to be kind of, there are certain things about us that are on autopilot. So When you kind of look at your workplace, I guess, like as a classroom from the learning angle, you mentioned communication and this particular CEO who was talking about communication barriers he was having with his wife and therefore his vice president. Do you think, and I'm not pointing fingers here or, you know, looking to someone to take the accountability or the responsibility, but obviously he was a common denominator in both the relationships. Did he kind of come back to you after this training that you did with him and say, like, he applied these communication tools to all his relationships? How did his life change in that way?
That's exactly right. He was the common denominator, and recognizing that his communication style was potentially getting in the way, that, you know, in my experience in working with senior executives around the world, really, I find that half conversations are had, that the first half of the conversation is had in the person's head on the way to the office. And when they get to the office, it's, so you're going to follow up on this, this, this. And it leaves the other person like, sure, yes, I will do that. I have no idea why. Instead of, okay, so, hey, I was thinking about this on the drive in. And to give you context, this is what I was thinking. Can you take it from here? You know, that's a very different conversation.
Right. I'm actually really curious because you worded it in a way that I kind of experience. In my full-time work, I run my own podcast production company and I manage a lot of creatives. And I find creatives in their head, and I'm not, like, again, singling out people like this, but I find a behavior of creatives is in their head, they know exactly what their vision looks like. That's what makes them such great visionaries. But when it comes to communicating that vision, they only tell you things that in their sense make sense, but you're like, what do you mean? What does this mean? What are you saying? Right. What do you think it is within people, within humans, that kind of blocks them from being able to communicate or articulate their vision? Because obviously a vision or a creative vision or being able to communicate is such an effective tool to have in any kind of field.
It's interesting because I don't see it as a block per se.
Right.
It's actually more of an assumption. We have what's called the curse of knowledge. So if I go off to a seminar and I learn something, I come back going, oh, you're going to respond this exact same way. Yeah. Right. And and it's like, I assume that now everybody's world has changed because my world has changed. Right. And so the curse of knowledge is, well, if I'm thinking about a process this way, all I have to do is tell you two snippets of it and not give you any context, and you'll understand it. And the truth is, you're not in anyone else's head, and you need the context. This goes back, if you wind it back to couples work, this is exactly what happens, where men and women traditionally think differently. And so the assumption is, for the woman, typically, you'll understand my emotional needs. And for the man to communicate, well, of course I love you. That's why I bought you those tires, was to keep you safe. If I didn't love you, I wouldn't have done that thing. And it's like, well, the context is a little different and the needs are a little different. And so to understand the thinking, you actually have to back it up and go, well, this is what I need. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I need. And that's how you get, whether it's at home or in the corporate setting, that's how you get your needs met.
This is fascinating. I kind of want to talk more about these sorts of things. Because you work with so many leaders, I'm curious to know, when it comes to effective leaders who create, you know, long-lasting businesses, amazing workplace environments, what do you think are some of the core skills that they need? And what do they need to work on as a leader to ensure that these skills are maintained and executed?
Again, it goes back, I think it goes to context.
Right.
Some of the strongest leaders have also been a little bit petulant. They've been, you know, known to throw tantrums. And everyone from Steve Jobs to Bezos, I mean, they've been known to drop the F-bomb, and really, it serves them and it works against them, because what happens is they create, it's almost like an army of people that want to step up and please them. One of the strongest negotiation techniques that I learned in my reading along the way was from one of the money giants. And what he said was, is that the best you can do? And in negotiation, that's a great question. And when you ask a team member who is presenting something, is that the best you can do? Before they're even finished, is that the best you can do? They'll go, well, no. And they go back and they work on it and they come back and they give it again. It's, is that the best you can do? And they go off and they work on it and they come back again. It's like, is that the best you can do? Well, yeah, that's the best I can do. That's what I want the first time. And it's like, okay, so they create this sense of accountability at a higher level. That's what great leaders do. Where most great leaders fall down is creating context and vision. That's where things go badly. A lot of times there's information hoarding, as if to say, because I have all the information, I'm going to be the most powerful. When actually sharing information is what creates a fully lifted organization. That works in families too. You know, the same dynamic in families.
That's great. A context in vision. That's so true. I want to kind of move away from leaders and kind of go back to you, Dr. P, because this is what the interview is about. Talk to me about, you know, you work with a lot of successful people and you coach them. Talk to me about your morning routine. When you wake up, what are the things that you do to start your day?
I wake up, I grab my phone, I cuss. None of that. Right? It's just, look at your face. You're like, that can't be possible. Yeah, I know. Yeah, the first thing I do is grab my phone. No, I'm so anti that, right? The first thing I do is, I will tell you, the very, very first thing I do is I say these words out loud. Thank you.
I love it. That's a very original way that you've told me about your gratitude practice.
Right. So before I'm even out of bed, I wake up and I'm like, thank you. And then the first thing I think of is, who do I get to serve today? Not, oh God, what's on my list to do today? And so many people will grab their phones and have a to-do list of somebody else's agenda that's pulling them and oppressing them before they even get to figure out what they want to create today. So for me, it's gratitude. Thank you. I get this day to create and to touch people's lives. The next thing is who? Like, who do I get to play with, you know? And I go to bed looking at tomorrow so that when I wake up, that's already planted. And then, you know, I'll have water. I typically have water with me almost all the time. I'll do some writing and I'll see my wife. We'll talk a little bit in the morning, probably have some coffee and then discuss the day and then look at email. It's not for an hour or so, maybe more, before I even, you know, really, really start to sort through email. And as I said, at the end of the day, it's very similar. You know, I wind down and I'm reflective. What did I accomplish today? And it's not, here's where most people blow it. Oh, look what's left on my to-do list. Look what I didn't do. I look at what's left over like, okay, in terms of priorities, did I miss something that was a top priority or can I carry it over without a problem? And do I carry it to tomorrow or do I really push it to where I think it can, I can actually deal with it? Because tomorrow is so easy. Oh, I'll just deal with it. So I look at then all that I did do and I go, you know what? And I actually had this conversation with my wife last night, almost exactly like this. It was, I accomplished a lot today. Like we check in with each other. I accomplished a lot today. I didn't do everything on my to-do list. Darn it. But that said, I accomplished a lot today and I was really happy about it. It's great. You know, every day is a new day to engage in a new way of being. And as I'm gesturing, I'm wearing this thing that's like, I've had surgery on my hand recently and that has caused everything in my world to slow down tremendously. And so again, there's this sort of gratitude that, well, okay, it's going to take longer than it usually takes to type. It's going to take longer to open a can or a bottle. It's going to take, it's like the small stuff, right? Yeah. And so it's still, okay, what can I do versus what am I stopped from doing? Because my hand is learning to do things anew. That's just the way I think. So since this is, I mean, the interview is about happiness and what makes it work and all that stuff, it's really a matter of what can I do? What do I get to do? How much better am I today than I was yesterday? And so it's incremental. And almost always I awaken with a smile. I mean, that's, it's like you start there, happiness is there. You know, it's created. You've created it. So that's a long way of answering your question, I think.
One thing that I'm curious about, and this is the point of the Ginny Show, is I love unpacking various traditions, beliefs, you know, human conditions, for want of a better word, to see how people, you know, go through life and the mindsets that they have and the beliefs that they have. And when I ask this question about morning routines, people who seemingly are happier and lighter, not all the time, obviously we're humans, we have up and down days, but people who are most of the time above average, let's just say, most of the time who are above average happy with their lives, they have a practice of gratitude. And they also have this very positive perspective. It's always from a glass half full way. And I know that sounds all rosy and that kind of thing, but I've noticed people who have that perspective of, I'm grateful to be alive, just starting at that gratitude and then taking the next step of, how can I use my day and my time to serve others, that point of service to other fellow humans. Generally, people like that are happy. And I think we can talk about universal laws and the law of flow, but I think just putting that out into your day, setting that intention, I think is just a great way to attract that happiness and positivity. So, yeah, so thank you for sharing that, Dr. P. I love that you kind of have that time to say thank you and that you start your day connecting with your wife and then it's phones and emails. Concurrent to that, you have a wind down routine as well. The Ginny Show. Oh.
What's the best mattress for you? Well, if you're an egg or a kitten, check out the competition. But if you're a human person, put your body on a Nectar mattress. As well as award-winning layers of comfort, you can sleep easy knowing you got incredible value. Mattresses start at just $499, and you get hundreds of dollars in accessories thrown in, as well as a 365-night home trial and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com.
Hey, The Ginny Show. We tell you things we probably shouldn't.
I'm also wondering too, who are the five people that you spend the most time with? And if you could use one word to describe each person, what would it be?
That's interesting because obviously, I mean, you ask the question because we are the sum of the people we spend the most time with. Mostly these days, it's my wife and my clients. And it's interesting. I have a rotation of clients that I spend my time with. This is where I work, you know, complete with the
inbuilt cash.
Yep. So spend my time with her. How would I describe her? You don't want to know. It's interesting because I do look at who are the people that are influential. I'm about to celebrate 15 years with my wife, Shannon.
Congratulations.
This is my second marriage. You know, the first one had its ups, it had its downs, and, you know, it came to a conclusion. This one with Shannon is really great. And the way I would say what makes this work, and I don't know if I have one word for the relationship or for Shannon, but really what makes it work is, I guess the word would be support. If I have something I'm working on, all I have to do is say, I'm working on it, or I'm thinking about, and her response will be, well, you should go for it. You know, like, what kind of time do you need? Go for it. And then, you know, she's working on things. She works at a major company in the San Francisco Bay Area. And she's also working on a master's in history for no other reason than because it's something she finds exciting. And it's like, well, cool, go do that. Like, that's what excites you. You need to go do that. And so we've never been in this space of, I've worked with so many couples where it's competitive. Well, if you do this, then I get to do that. There's scorekeeping, and that can destroy a couple so fast or make it treacherous over the long term, which, you know, it's not great. And so my life, I will just tell you, my life was not always happy. I like to be happy. I'm a pretty happy guy, and I grew up as kind of a placator. I grew up in a way where somehow I just knew my role was to make nice, make it okay for everybody, make it okay for everybody. And back when I was about 42, a lot of things, I was pretty powerful, potent out in the world. I was doing some big consulting, but a lot of things were going wrong in my life. And my life was kind of upside down in my financial world. I was really struggling. My marriage at that point was pretty close to being on the rocks. It was upside down also. The job I was holding, even though I was consulting, the job I held, you know, I was pretty much on the verge of losing that. And so much was going on in my life that I felt like I needed to get away. I just needed time and space. And so I went to my brother's house. He lived in Nevada, and I'm sitting on his living room floor, rocking back and forth, kind of pulling at the strands of white carpeting. And he comes in. He's 12 years younger than I am. So Jeff comes in. He tries to cheer me up because, you know, being 12 years younger, he never really had a chance to help me when we were growing up. And so he comes in. He's like, brother! And I'm like, I'm trying to be depressed. So, rocking back and forth, pulling at these strands of carpeting. He's like, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here. And he's like, you know, that's his energy. And I'm like, okay. He goes, hey, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Should we, I'll tell you what, let's get a pizza. Should we get a pizza? I think we should get a pizza. Yeah, cool. Let's get a pizza.
Right.
So he's leaping off into the kitchen, grabs the phone book back. This dates this timeline for me because that's when there were phone books and phones on walls. And he picked up the phone that was a big yellow phone with a long yellow cord. And he starts to punch in the numbers and he calls to me, what do you like on your pizza? And I'm like, I don't know, pineapple and olives. And he's like, great. And he starts to dial. And it was at that point, Jenny, I burst into tears. And he hangs up the phone, he puts the phone book away, and he comes over to me, and he puts his arm around me, and he goes, dude, it's just a pizza. And And I'm like, I know. Here's the thing. I gave you the answer that was the easy answer. It's what would make it easy for the kids. I told you pineapple and olives, but really the thing is, no one's ever asked me that question. He's like, what? I go, no one's ever asked me what I like on my pizza. And I gave you the go along to get along answer. And if I've been going along to get along and gave you that answer for a small thing, what about the big choices in my life? And it was at that point, Jenny, it was at that point, everything changed. Right? Just a simple question about what do you like on your pizza?
I was just about to say, you used a food analogy, so you had my attention hook, line, and sinker from a point you said pizza. I'm like, yep, I was listening before, but you had me then. But the example that you gave is very profound because, you know, I can relate to the point where I felt like I was that person too. And sometimes I still do slip into that habit of being the person who makes nice, who makes sure everything is okay with everyone else. And then you kind of neglect your own self needs and you have to teach yourself the self-love, which sounds bizarre because if you are, you know, accustomed to loving someone else, there's obviously beliefs sometimes around loving yourself as selfish and not, you know, something that you're used to doing. And it's something that I try to work on as well. And one of my triggers or something that I've understood about myself is I always let things bottle up if they frustrate me. And I'm trying to get to a point now where I speak before it bottles up.
So laser coaching for you.
Okay, let's do it.
Ready?
Yep.
So eliminate the word always.
Okay.
And eliminate the word try. So I always bottle things up. Really, Jenny? Always? Well, a lot of times.
Good point.
Right? Here's the coaching. And because it's going to work for you, it's going to work for your audience as well. Put it in the past tense and it allows today and right now to be different. I used to bottle things up is very different than I always bottle things up.
And you got my chest hand action to on point there too. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
That is like, I can't breathe. Yeah. I can't swallow. Yeah. I can't, right? That I've experienced that. And you know what? Our viewers have experienced that too. I'm certain of it because we who give are in a position of wanting things to go well for other people we care so much. Well, here's the thing. You can't give what you don't have. And so you've got to let go of that thing that had that grip on you.
Right.
So you go. So make it past tense. Anything you're working on that you've been struggling with, you make it past tense. Well, I used to bottle things up. Right. It's so much more freeing, right?
That's so true.
And then instead of the word try, you're going to use the word practice.
I used to bottle things up. I'm going to practice to speak up before they make me angry. Oh, look at you, Dr. P. You've changed my life.
Isn't that magical? So in choosing your power, I talk about 10 different watchwords, and try and always and never are in there.
What are the other seven? I'm curious.
All right, so I'm going to give you the top three because these will change your life.
Right.
You're going to eliminate the word why. Now, this is an interesting one. For those of us that are self-reflective, I'm still going to allow the word why in as long as you're looking at why does that matter to me? What? But if you use it as, well, why did I do that? Or worse, why did you do that? Why did you choose those frames for your glasses? Makes it sound like I'm blaming you.
And that's probably how a lot of people would hear that as well.
Right. Yeah. Instead of, hey, what about those glasses do you like? Right.
Now I'm interested. Glasses you don't like, Wayne? Keep going.
Right. So what about those glasses do you like is different than why did you choose those frames? I will tell you, when I got together with Shannon, I would show up and I'd go, well, I'm really excited about this. And she'd go, huh, not really my thing, but what about that do you like? And I was like, I found her.
Oh, Shannon. That's a great way of kind of, you know, staying engaged, but also authentic. Yeah.
You're allowed not to like something or you're allowed to have a different opinion. And that's what makes a really strong relationship. So if you change why to what or how, it changes the nature of things. If you're living with a family or roommates and you go, hey, why are there mugs in the sink? The only answer to that is because that's where I left them and gravity kept them there.
That is true.
It's like a giant FU, you know, and that's not the answer. that you want. Because what you're doing with a why question like that is trying to blame and shame the other person. Why are there mugs in the sink? Meaning, parentheses, you're a bad person for leaving mugs in the sink. When in fact, what you really want to convey is, hey, we all live here. What would it take to keep the sink clear by the end of the day? Now you've got working agreements, you know, and I will tell you, parents of 8, 9, 10-year-olds face this all the time because they become very literal at that age. So it's like, hey, can you get your jeans off the floor? And then you come back and there's shoes and socks on the floor where the jeans were. It's like, why are those shoes and socks there? It's like, because you said to move my jeans. It's like, no.
Yeah. Hey,
we all share this space. What can we do to keep this space clear? That's very different, right? The next one is but. So there's why, but, and one more. The next one is but. And but negates everything that comes before it. And it also sounds sort of better than.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use the glasses thing again, right?
Right.
Okay. So you have more round, dark frames, but I have more brown oval frames. And it sounds like mine are better, just for that one word. And if I go, hey, Jenny, you have more dark round frames and my frames are oval and round, then we're talking glasses. It's not one up or one down.
Gotcha.
The other place that this showed up, and it's very dramatic, I had a senior manager was a division leader, trying to really pump up his team. And he's like, hey, July and August were really great months, but we have 2 weeks left in September. And everybody's like, I don't even know what that means. Does that mean July and August weren't good months? Or what does that mean? And if you listen to this, it's what I call a swallowed syllable. You can barely hear the word and it changes the entire meaning. July and August were really great months, and we have 2 weeks left in September.
It totally changes what you meant. That
and is so inclusive. It's really, really, really inclusive. And that's what we're after. So you can yes and somebody the same way that you'd want to yeah but them. You yes and, you're basically plus one-ing. You're saying, well, I see your idea and I plus one that. Great idea, and what about this? Awesome. Because what happens is our conversation tends to be competitive, right? We wait for the other person to take a breath.
Yeah. And the Dalai Lama says, and I'm prefacing this quite poorly, but essentially a lot of people don't listen. They wait for their turn to speak. And it's true. When we are engaged in that kind of, I guess, conversation, also we hear things and we add our own meaning to it, and the context of things in the discussion can be derailed completely. Okay, so you've given me some laser coaching. You said words to avoid using why and but.
I have one more if you want it.
Yeah,
you want the third one.
Yeah.
The top three of the watchword list is should.
Ah, yes. I 100% agree with that.
So Fritz Perls, this has been attributed to people all over the place, and I'm a big one for correct attribution. So Fritz Perls was the founder of Gestalt Psychology back in the 60s. He was the one that said, shoulds are shit, and there's no reason to should all over yourself or anyone else. So don't should on yourself or anyone else, right?
Right.
He also called these shoulders, S-H-O-U-L-D-E-R-S, shoulders, because when they crawl up around your ears, you know you've been going, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that, I should have done this. And where this shows up is also in blame. And that is, oh, you should have called me. You should have been here earlier. You should have brought green beans instead of potato salad. And it's like, well, okay, looking at the time, I can't should have called you earlier. It's now. I can't should have been here sooner. It's now. I can't should have brought green beans. I'm bringing you potato salad. And so looking at what to do, what are the substitution words, right? So we know that instead of why, we use what or how. Instead of but, we use and. And instead of should, we use would or could. Hey, if you know that you're running late, could you give me a call so that I'm not like freaking out? If we've all agreed to bring certain things to the table, could you stick with what we all agreed to so that we actually have balance on the table? You're making new working agreements by doing that. And I think that's really important. So why, but, and should, and then the laser coaching for you, you're going to put things that you're working on in the past tense. And you're going to use the word practice instead of try.
Gotcha. So eliminate the word always and put it in the past tense and use the word practice instead of try. And you've given me 3 of the 10 words in the word watch list. You know, Dr. P, you've given me a ton of value in the short time that, you know, I've had this honor of having this conversation with you. I know there's so many more topics that we could talk about, and I'd love to have you back on the show. But you've given me 3 words of the word watch list. Try saying that really fast. But watch word list. Tell me, where can we find out more about you and get access to, you know, your amazing knowledge and training that you are great at?
Thank you. So you can, if you spell my name correctly, you can find me online, waynepurnell.com. I also, if you wanted to offer this to your viewers and listeners, Relationship Recharge is a guide to revitalize your relationships. And so if you go to relationshiprecharge.com, you'll actually get a preview of the watchwords along the way with some action tips for how to put more juice back in your relationships. You know, and it's things like remember what got you together and plan your spontaneity, which sort of makes no sense.
It's counterintuitive, but I love it.
It makes all the sense, right? So relationshiprecharge.com is a great place to go. Relationshiprecharge.com. And then waynepurnell.com is also where you'll find a ton of stuff about me. And I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that, you know, we're sharing this time together. Thanks, Ginny.
Fantastic. Well, that's Dr. Wayne Purnell here on The Ginny Show. He's dropped a lot of knowledge bombs there. You know, words you should be mindful of using and words to admit when you want to go into a new phase of growth in your life. So, you know, make sure you check out the resources in the show notes to have access to your word watch list. Wayne, thanks for joining me on The Ginny Show.
It is a pleasure. Thank you. The Ginny Show.
The Scrabble Go Guide to Learning New Words. Quizzical, your dad's face when he hasn't got enough vowels. Skeptical, your mom's face when you try to say smole is a word. Belligerent, how your brother feels when he doesn't win. Vocabulary, what you all build when you play Scrabble Go together. Everyone's a winner with Scrabble Go, the fun brain training game you can play with family wherever you are. Available on Android and iOS. Download Scrabble Go today.